All right, welcome. I am glad you're here. Before we dive into this episode, I want you to know that the summer session of my Brave and Beautiful community is now open for early registration. We begin on July 15th. That session runs July to September. The work we do together this summer will center around living with a clear and joyful sense of purpose, doing more of what makes us feel fully alive and thriving in every season. Our work will invite you to dream, vision, recognize your strengths or gifts, feel lighter and more playful in your life, and rediscover what living on purpose means for you in this season of your life. So I'm delighted today to enjoy a conversation with two guests, Kathy Escobar and Phyllis Mathis. Kathy is my friend, and she and Phyllis have been soul friends for almost 2 decades and are the hosts of the Soul and Practice podcast, dedicated to raw conversations and real practices. Their work is centered on healthier humaning, I like that, and making it in this weird world. So Phyllis offered her work as a therapist for many years and now is a life coach and author of the beautiful and wise book, Subversive Soul: The Gentle Revolution Everyone Needs. And Kathy is a nonprofit leader and community cultivator, excuse me, and author of several books, including Practicing, Changing Yourself to Change the World. And I'll share their links in the show notes. So welcome, Kathy and Phyllis.
Great to be here. Thanks, Crystal.
Yeah, we love hanging out with friends.
I know that because I listen to your podcast.
Say the same thing every time.
It's always enjoyable. Okay, so I'm going to preface the conversation with a reminder about the theme of this season on my podcast. So the theme is old stories, new possibilities. And I'm thinking about the stories we are told or inherit through conditioning and the storytelling of family, religion, media, culture, and more. And how, if we want to walk in greater freedom, health, and joy, we must quiet the conditioning and noise to uncover the truth of who we are and what we want and need, and then bravely forge a new path forward or otherwise live open to a new joyful possibility. And sometimes I say a new hopeful and joyful possibility. I write and talk a lot about both hope and joy. All right, so as we dive in, I invite both of you in, taking turns to share a story that you have personally needed to question or rewrite for your own well-being. I'll take a volunteer, whoever wants to dive in.
Want to go first, Phyllis?
Yeah, I can start. I just now thought of this because it's a big theme for me. I was a really fervent evangelical believer for so many years, and I was always very curious about the soul, because I didn't get good answers about what it meant to have a soul, except that I better give it away. Better give it to Jesus. I had to, there was something about that I didn't feel like I had the right to own. And so that story caused a lot of confusion for me in my spirituality. And then I felt like in my spiritual development, I had to kind of reclaim the soul and how, what is it actually? Or if I don't know what it is exactly, how do I describe it? How do I live with it? How do I live within it? And so that's just been the major story rewrite of my life, is understanding that the soul was more than I was taught, and it really was meant to be mine, not just mine alone, but it was meant to be mine to occupy and enjoy and learn about and let, cooperate with. So that's more of an overview of my life story, actually, but definitely a rewrite.
So I have two questions, if
Yeah.
I may. One, like, do you see the soul as a source of inner guidance and wisdom?
Yes.
And is your book Subversive Soul sort of, is it based on or rooted in that sense of kind of reclaiming your, that relationship?
Yeah, I would say that's, you know, that's really the underlying theme of everything. Like what I've figured out that I was living the way I thought I should live, mostly from my mind, you know, and from concepts and things, the ego driven sort of life, but it's, but my soul was subverting that all along or trying to anyway. And so when I got a clue that the soul, it speaks differently than we expect, cares about things that we don't necessarily, we were never trained really to care about, doesn't care about a lot of things we spend a whole lot of time caring about, and moves in ways, or it trains us in ways that are really surprising. So that's why I like to call it subversive, because it's, you know, just under there, inviting, kind of nudging, kind of cajoling, kind of leading, if we will. And if we don't want to, we can just not do it and stay split. But if we, if I live from my soul, it just feels so much better. I just feel so much more congruent and whole. So, yeah.
Are you a fan of Parker J. Palmer's work?
I try not to read other people that much, but he's clearly a great one. And what I have read of him is, yes, I am a fan.
Yeah. Anyway, it reminds me of that. Like, he speaks a lot about the undivided life, and
oh yeah,
his work is has been really helpful for me. I tend to be very self-directed and careful about, like, I don't, you know, when people ask you, like, who do you aspire to be like? I'm like, but there are a few people that I'm like, I would consider them a teacher, even though they don't know me. And he's one of them.
Yeah. David White, Jeanine Roth, Anne Lamott. those people I'm always resonating with. And I like bits and pieces of their work.
Yeah, I see a lot of similarity between you and I. But anyway, we'll move on for now.
Okay. Yeah.
So, Kathy, how about you? A story you've needed to question or rewrite for your own well-being?
Well, I was thinking as I was listening to Phyllis, you know, all of our stories are kind of all tangled up together in different ways. That's why we became friends 18 years ago. But I think for me, like a core piece, you know, I am a adult child of an alcoholic, Enneagram 2, for those of you that know the Enneagram, helper, people pleaser, peacemaker in my family. And so that's kind of like where I came into the story. And then I too was in the faith stream that loved that shit, basically. Oh, I'm not positive I can say a bad word.
You can say all the bad words you want.
Okay. I'm sorry. It just comes out. So I'm really good at knowing what everybody else needs. And I'm intuitive, it's in my body, I know, and just putting other people's needs first. And so I did that in my family, I did that in my faith for a long time. And then it's like a reflex of what to do. And that is put other people's needs and wants ahead of my own and not really know my own. And, or if I know them, not rock the boat enough to get them. And so that old story is from like little Kathy from early. And so here I am now, I'm 57, and, I have been rewriting this old story by asking myself the simplest question. And that is, what do I really want? And how complicated that is. It's a lot more complicated. It's easy to say. But I feel in this last chunk of years, I am doing that differently and then naming and saying what I want. I don't always know. It takes me a while sometimes, but a lot of the times this is back to the soul work that I think Phyllis and friendship and in love has helped me so much with, is that I do know what I want. I'm just afraid sometimes to claim it and ask for it or work towards it. And so the more I continue to practice that, the easier it's becoming, but it's not without resistance, and it's not in an easeful way all the time, but I am practicing, and it is getting easier to say it and own it. Starts with me, and like give myself the space and ask myself. And sometimes I literally just ask myself the question over and over, what do I really want? What do I really want? What do mm-hmm. I really want? And this is a piece of some coaching for Gateways coaching training that I did. And that just really stuck with me. So that's one of the stories. They're all kind of tangled up together, but that's probably the one that feels most present for me in this season.
Yeah. I mean, we could have a whole podcast episode just here, like just stay here, right? It's good. And the women I work with, like I hear so much of this showing up in with different language. And for me, it has like the last 2 years, I always choose what I call mind, body, spirit, intentions for my year. At my birthday, I choose a mantra, and then I choose 3 to 5 words that help describe how I want to be or who I choose to be in the world. And listening to the soul, this is where I'm like, when I hear something, I have a very, very strong inner voice. But what I know now with years of practice is that when I say yes, because like you said, Phyllis, it's a choice. You don't have to say yes to the work. Like you could just say, no, I'm good. Like not right now. Mm-hmm. But when you say yes, two things. One, whatever I hear, if I trust that, I don't have to know, and I never know what it's going to mean, what it's going to look like exactly. All I have to do is say yes to the work. I know it's going to take me deep and do a lot of unraveling and a lot of healing. And that can scare the crap out of me sometimes. So I don't have to think about that. I just have to say yes to the first little step. Two, it always, always takes me into greater freedom. So that is my confidence, that our soul will always lead us into freedom. Yeah. And that's the beautiful part of this, I think. But for me, the last couple of years, part of my work has been to learn how to value myself more deeply. And wow, like I had no idea how much work there was for me to do in this part of my life. And I mean, I'm nowhere near done, but there's been a whole lot of healing and growth in that.
Yeah. So. Don't you think it sounds so simple, but once you start doing it, it can be really complicated.
And humbling, like that first, like 6 months, like, so yeah, like at my, I'm turning 50. I always forget how old I am. I'm turning 53 soon. So maybe that was at my 51st birthday that was one of the things that started calling me. Oh my word. That first like 6-ish months or so, I cried a lot. It was so humbling how strong my instinct was to do things. And then I would see, like, I would say yes, or I would offer something, and I would see, oh, that came from fear, because I don't believe in myself. That came from whatever that was coming from, but it was not actually from a place of valuing myself. And I would have to practice going back to the person saying, I made a mistake, I can't actually do that, or, you know, self-correct. And oh, anyway. So
we know the feeling.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I really want to talk a lot about play today. And in episode 87 of Soul and Practice, you two talked about different soul practices for summer. And towards the end of that episode, I think one of the ideas that came up was play. And you really grabbed my attention. I think I said, Kathy, that was my favorite episode. I think you were just speaking my language and probably just like touching on all of these things that I'm feeling, living, experiencing, wondering about. And so, but play, it's not something I feel adept at. Like, it's not something that I come by naturally, you know? And so I but I've been exploring it from different perspectives. Like, I love research, so I'll like dive into research on creativity, looking at research on play, like looking at different things. And it's been interesting to me to see some of the like ways that play as a, because play and creativity, I think, are tangled up together, but how they are also entwined with purpose and joy and like all these other things that we probably, you know, all say that we want. So thinking about midlife women, because my work centers around the needs and experiences of midlife women, play or playfulness can be one form of self-expression and lead us to a sense of purpose, help us live filled up and overflowing with joy. And that's one of my commitments to myself, is to allow myself to live filled up and overflowing. That's how I imagine it and try to experience it. And I have this strong belief and an embodied practice. Like, it's been a work. It's been a real practice to learn how to move joy from my head into my body. And I just have this strong sense that, like, when we are filled up, that if we would just let ourselves be filled up with goodness, you know, whether that's beauty, play, delight, rest, like whatever all the things are, we naturally spill over into the world around us, and we wouldn't have to worry so much about chasing that sense of purpose or that, I don't know, that's meaning that lives outside of us. It's just like, what if we could just like live fully alive and expressed, you know, express our true selves. And then we just like, even through our broken parts, I imagine like we leak out. Okay. So anyways, I'll probably come back and just touch on the work of Dr. Stuart Brown, who did, I think, decades of work around play. But I'm just going to go right into some of the things that you shared in that episode. So Kathy, you shared, and this isn't an exact quote, cannot promise that it is, you said something like, it's a dishonoring thing to take ourselves so seriously all of the time and do what you love to do without judgment. It's important to make space for what we love to do. So let's just start there. It's a dishonoring thing to take ourselves so seriously all the time. Do what you love to do without judgment. I would just love to hear you share whatever you want to share about that.
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like this is an ongoing theme that has been, when I look at the timeline on real healing work, I would say I'm 30 years in. So 30 years in, my daughter is 30, and that was when I started kind of examining more of the patterns in my family. I mean, I was still really pretty young, but I at least was starting to name some of the things that had happened in my family and some of the patterns that I developed. And one of the biggest things is, even though I do have like a basic positive outlook on things on the whole, I am such a hard worker. So I can work to the bone, and I will do anything to do it right, to do it perfect, to get it the way it's supposed to be, you know. And I have always been that way. I started working when I was 13 because I needed to make money to buy clothes because my mom was a single mom and couldn't pay for them, you know. So I just always worked. And so work is easy for me. Work's easy. And so I worked to go to college. I worked to get my master's degree. I worked to make my kids a certain way, you know, all the things that were basically like the stepping stones. And we played. I'm married to an Enneagram 7. And so Jose is literally a super fun person. He really is. But when I look back at our early marriage, I can say this, that it was not as easy for me. I didn't like to play sports or games where I couldn't do it right. And I saw these people that could do it better. And there was a funny moment that I had in San Diego. This is a long time ago. I was with a friend. I lived in Colorado at this point, but I went back and we were actually playing beach volleyball. And I just never really did that until I got a little older and tried it. And I remember saying, I know there's an athlete like inside of me. somewhere. And then we laughed so hard, I almost peed my pants because it was like, not, that wasn't me. And because I always just didn't let myself be is the biggest way, because to do these kinds of things, to play is vulnerable. To really truly play, to play a game, to play, you know, and I did some of those things. So I'm not trying to say that I never did, but I was always really inhibited. Like I was not free in it. I didn't mm-hmm. want to try certain sports or certain things. And so over time, it's so weird, like as I kept healing. So this is why I bring this up, because it was like a parallel thing or an intersection, not a parallel. They were kind of happened and then they crossed over, where some of my healing work, where I became more free in my body, I became more free in who I was, I became more clear about things that I like to do, is that I started to let myself do those things that I loved more freely. And so back to, you know, to wrap up on that, is just that I do think we know how to take ourselves seriously. And it's a problem, because then we just are so hard on ourselves. And so then we're hard on ourselves about play.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like all tangled up. And I think life is very complicated. We know deep pain. Krista and I share the same story, different twists, but same story. And it's a deep pain. And so you're like, how can I ever have fun? And how can I be light? And how can I have hope and joy? And it's because all of it can live in us. We can work hard. I can work hard and I can play hard and I can let myself feel free. So over the years, it's gotten a lot easier. And that water sports has been a big piece of that. And this is a piece in Subversive Soul and sharing with Phyllis also, because I learned what it was to just let my body do what it loved to do uninhibited. And it took me a long time to be free. And I actually had some critiquey people in that circle on water sports in the early years. And when I said, I can't do that, like, I can't have anybody critiquing anything about anything related to this thing that I love. And when we took that equation out, it was really interesting how I could enter in. And that is a place where it has helped me just let myself enjoy trying and practicing and being free. The water has been a piece of that, but it's translated into so many other places. And so, I just think we do ourselves a disservice when we take ourselves too seriously all the time, because life is too hard without goodness and fun mm-hmm. and freedom in it. It's just too hard. We need it, in my opinion, to survive. We need the ability to let ourselves enjoy things and goof around and make ourselves vulnerable and have a good time and laugh at ourselves instead of taking ourselves so freaking seriously all the time.
Yeah. So thanks for that, Kathy. So yeah, so it can be like, so you mentioned like it's a wise thing because it's protective. But also like, I think our core beliefs can really impact like, whether or not, like, are you here on earth to play or are you here to work? Like, that's actually a thing. Like, so are you here just to convert people? Are you here just to like, it's like, or are you allowed? Like, is that a dishonorable thing to actually enjoy the world around you while there is also suffering in the world? Like, this is a big, messy conversation, right? Yeah. But it's one that does come up with a lot of the humans I engage with. Are they have big, compassionate hearts. They care deeply about the suffering in the world. And one of my arguments is, okay, and you not taking care of yourself doesn't help people who have no food to eat. It doesn't help your family. It's like, you have to fill up. You have to have strength and resilience and beyond that, like, is it wrong to also have joy and spill that over into the world? You know, like, it's, I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about, because you, I know you are those people who care very, very deeply about injustice and the pain in the world. And, okay. So, yeah. So I want to come back to judgment. I want to make sure I'm saying it out loud because I don't want to forget. But one thing that I appreciated in Dr. Brown's work is he talks about play as a state of being rather than a single activity. And there were examples where he said, like, one person's play, like, so somebody playing sports. So it's about similar to the Enneagram, actually, it's about motivation, not behavior. So you could see somebody playing sports and one person is playing and the other person is not. One person could be working at their computer, writing something. One person is playing, one person is not. And I found that really interesting and helpful also because, like, I've really been doing so much and continue to do so much work to really, like I feel like when I turned 50 or 51, even, I finally felt like I came home to my true self. I met and befriended my true self finally. Like, I had grown into myself. And so there's been a lot of peeling away, like, well, what's mine? What isn't? What's the stuff I picked up as self-protection? What's true, Krista? You know, like, all of this. And the truth is, I'm not a player, like a board game athlete, like, you know what? Like, there's times like when I was building my business, I love strategy, I love a learning curve. And there's some of that that is play for me. And it felt affirmed by this research. And there's other things where it's not, it's clearly work, right? But again, motivation, not behavior. So anyways, I thought that was really interesting. It might be helpful for some people who also don't see themselves in that, like the way that we might automatically think of play. And you're not necessarily exempt. So, all right. So Phyllis, you on that episode that I mentioned, you, I think, said like something like play doesn't come naturally to you. Yeah. Okay, so I would love it if you share your relationship to play, share a bit, and then I shared a link with both of you where you could take a quick little quiz and see what your play personality came up as. So if you want to share that as well, that'd be fun.
Oh, it was really helpful. And I thought of some things. So I think that I don't think of myself as a player, but if a relationship is involved, then I'll play. So I'm really motivated toward connection. And so I was just thinking about after seventh grade, or maybe it was before seventh grade, my friend across the street wanted to take tennis lessons. And I could care less about anything. I didn't come up with that idea. And I said, sure, I'll take tennis lessons with you. So I was willing to just sign up for anything because I had somebody to do it with. So I'm kind of a joiner follower type person. And so we started playing tennis, and then we were on the tennis team together in high school. And then I just loved hitting the ball back and forth. And then when I met my husband and we started playing tennis together, he's a competitor. And I was like, I can't, because then I got all in my head and then I couldn't really play. And I didn't really care about winning especially because I kept losing all the time. And every time I enjoyed playing, I enjoyed the movement. But if I had to keep score, then the critic would come online like, oh, you hit that the wrong way, or you're way behind, or you're always going to lose. And if we could talk to my friend Colleen, who got me into tennis in the first place, those first couple of years, she tolerated a lot of temper tantrums on the court because I was so hard on myself. Mm-hmm. And so she just kind of tolerated that so she could play too. So that was, that's kind of my, if I get invited to play, then I'll play pretty much anything, but I'm not a game player and I hate competing. It kind of takes all the fun out of it because I'm there to have a shared experience. So
are you a social nine Enneagram speak?
No, I'm a 1-to-1 9 or a sexual nine. Social, I need social connection, but I'm not the big group social. It's like I wanna have connection 1-to-1 usually. And so the dynamics of a room sometimes escape me. you know, from that regard, but I do crave interaction with people. And so when it comes to play, I feel like if I'm having a really good conversation and playing, you know, so I'll spend an hour and a half on the phone, and I set these up on purpose with friends, because to me, I feel like I'm playing if I'm having a really great conversation. Or I'll play a game so that we can have conversations. So we have another couple we play this very complicated card game with. And the game is fun, but it's basically the reason we get together. So then we can have snacks and we can have conversations.
Oh, snacks are fun.
Yeah. So it's all about the interaction for me, for play. And I love the quote that you said, that play comes from a way of being. And so I love that. But when it comes to my family, are gamers. The kids, the grandkids love playing games. My son-in-law, professional gamer, pretty much. And my husband loves to play games, but I'll go along, but I'm like, I don't, you know, can we do something else? Can we talk about something? Or unless it's like a charades or taboo or, you know, those kind of word games I kind of like. So I like play coming from this sense of being. I love that.
And what was your play type?
My play type was a storyteller. Oh. I have to be careful sometimes in situations that I'll just like go down a rabbit hole and start telling stories. And then, in fact, I'm remembering this one thing. I'm going to tell a story about telling stories. We were in Alabama on our civil rights learning trip recently. And we all got together in the evening. And somebody asked me a question about something, and I just started talking about some of my experiences. And then I looked around the table, and everybody was just like looking at me like they were listening. But I'd been talking for a long time, and I thought, I'm just going to stop now. So I'm definitely a storyteller, also an explorer. That was my second. So my favorite thing is to go exploring and telling stories about exploring, I guess. So those are my. Yeah.
I came up as an explorer, and I think it's centered around, I'm very curious. I want to understand how the world works and how people think and why you make that choice. And like, I question everything. And from that learning. And I would like to know, I want to come back and know your play type, Kathy, if you took the quiz. I would like to know. Hey, Raina. I would like to know what it feels like in your body when you're in a play state or a state of playfulness, if you can identify that. And this is one of the things that is helpful for me. And I want to say this because it might help people who are listening as well, because I equate it to the sense of feeling fully alive. And for me, like when I have, and also that sense of feeling fully alive, I believe more and more, I believe that's tied to my purpose and my place of deepest gifting. So I think that's interesting. And that we, you know, again, it would take a lot of time maybe to really unpack that. But when I have spaciousness in my life and I'm learning and I'm kind of puttering and I'm connecting dots internally and I'm like capturing ideas and things are percolating and I have quiet and solitude. And ideally I'm sitting out in the sun in my backyard and, you know, like that, I am in pure delight. And like, it is a joy and a pleasure that is hard for me to express. And then secondary to that is when I have the opportunity to have juicy conversations and offer up ideas and wisdom to other people and, you know, and my teaching and stuff. But what I've learned is that when I try to work and I don't have that spaciousness, which I thought sometimes was a nice to have, and I realized, oh, that is a quick, surefire way for me to like spiral into unwellness and want to quit everything. Like, I can't live like that. Anyway, so it's been an interesting thing, like all these little pieces that are kind of coming together in my mind and my body and realizing, oh, that's part of me being fully alive and fully expressed. And I think it's like one of the other purest states of joy and well-being for me is like laughter in deep connection, like with my favorite people in the world. Like we're having good food together and we're talking and we're just like, you know, and I'm just like, I am so happy. So what does it feel like in your body? Do you know when you have that experience of play or deep joy or?
Well, the words I think of are buoyant. I feel buoyant and expansive and high. It's like sometimes if I'm really playing, I'll just be like, woo, wow. You know, I just feel so free. I'm not in my head and I'm not hearing the chatter. And so if I go for a decent amount of time where I feel that buoyant, expansive freedom, I'll catch myself then and go, well, that was something. So that's how it feels in my body.
I love that word, buoyant. That's a good word. I think for me, I feel free, like a freedom and also a really deep groundedness. So even though it's light, you know, play is light, whatever that looks like, it's like also really anchored and centered. So that's what it feels like for me. And then the other word that comes to mind, I was at the Michael Franti concert in Chautauqua, and his music is very playful music, but it's also really meaningful music. It's really centered on justice and healing and trauma and the human experience. But he said that his whole music was created for ease of heart. Because I just have one goal. I just want ease of heart. And I can say that when I'm playing, whatever the play looks like, outside is a big piece for me, like almost anything outside, but I do feel an ease of heart. Like it's just the burdens aren't the same. And I think you pointed to something that I do want to name that is so important. The world's on fire. Life is hard. People are dying. There's war. It's really hard to like to hold these things together. And I feel it a lot because our nonprofit, you know, we're out on the water, we're outside. This is a big piece of our work during this season. And then I know what's happening. And I work in really hard places. Like I work with people who don't, they live in outside without a tent by themselves, you know, hard, hard situations that are on always on the fringe of life and realities are just really hard for them. And then I'm out on a motorboat, you know, surfing. And so like, how do you put those together? And I think you pointed to it and I just want to say it looks different. So what, like Phyllis doesn't like that. Like, that's not her way of playing. That's my way of playing. And then there's other things like we're all wired so differently, but it is like putting on our oxygen mask, in my opinion, and getting that air that we need to survive. And it will make us be able to handle and respond to the pain in the world better. And so it doesn't, it's not selfish. It's actually like, it really is life, like a life force that we need to be better humans, in my opinion. And so it does feel like that. It feels like an ease of heart, a lightness, a groundedness, and essential. I feel like sometimes in those moments, I'm like, oh yeah, this is essential to have that much space. Cause I do feel that opening the space when I'm outside or in a great moment where I feel free and I'm playing and not worrying about everything at the same time. Like, it's just like, make space to hold it all.
Yeah. What's your play type? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Phyllis.
Oh, I just went on piggybacking on that. I'll never forget Melvin Bray, the man who taught us about power systems and racial equality, things like that. He has a t-shirt that says Black Joy is Revolutionary. And then I also have I know someone whose parents were Holocaust survivors, and she talks about their community when they had a little community in a city of collect, and they would get together and just party down. And that sense of play in the face of suffering, or in the face of injustice, or in the face of the world burning, is a kind of defiance, I think, also. So I think it has that power to it as well. And I'm also interested, Kathy, in your play type.
Oh yeah, I love that reminder. I am a creator of play, and that creator and the director. Like, I just get, and that's why people, this is what I love about different types. I love different Enneagram types, personality types, and play types, whatever the types are, because it's honoring the breadth that we don't all have to be a certain way. And I like expanding definitions. And so, like, we think of play, like, yeah, I love what you said, like, of games, you know, well, that's one piece, and it looks so different for everybody. So I love to get a group together for fun and to connect and throw parties. And that some people are like, oh my gosh, I would hate that, you know, and I like it. I like it, and that's me. And so, and honoring that kind of goes back to that original quote, because I think just like dropping in and going, it's okay. And I can say that I have felt shame sometimes, like, for who I am, that's part of me, and like pushing it down or tamping it down doesn't serve well. Because I know that's just me, and it's not a sign of anything. It's just what helps me have ease of heart and be who I am. And so I'm the creator and the director. And so, like, running Water Heals is a big job that we do, and creating the space at the refuge all the time. My job is the community cultivator. And honestly, for the most part, it brings me so much joy. But one of the things that we've chosen to do, and this was embedded in the refuge community 18 years ago, and I'm so thankful, is a lot of laughter in hard things. Like, we're trying to kind of fight for our lives here, and we laugh about it and not take ourselves too seriously. And it's always kind of that culture of playing games, of like laughing, and it just has always been embedded in the refuge in certain ways. And I think that all of that has like helped us survive the human experience a little bit more than working so hard all the time to heal. Like, I gotta heal. Instead of like, oh my God.
But about, like, living too. Like,
yes. Yeah.
And your the context, and what I see too is like, again, so I'm kind of pushing my belief here. I want to come back and say, like, what I witnessed even for you, like, in Phyllis, I know less about you, but I still know some about you because of, you know, the podcast and Kathy and stuff. But I think that when we are in our true selves, you know, keep doing our healing work, there's this beautiful relationship between letting ourselves be filled up and like fully expressed and fully alive. That includes joy and pleasure and permission to play. And then from that place, if we bring our gifts to the world, I think that's where we have the biggest impact. We don't have to worry about doing all the things and all the needs, because it's like, if I trust me, if I trust how I'm wired, if I trust the gifts in me and I offer those, that creates change. And yeah, and I believe that's what I do in my work. And my work is unique. Not everybody could do what I do in the way I do it. And I see that for you too, right? Like, and it's really beautiful. But I think, you know, our world, I don't know, like, there's so I was even thinking about like how I love research, but I'm a very intuitive person too. So I will often go into research when I'm just really struggling, like if I'm feeling despair, if I'm in so much pain because of, you know, our son's gone, being gone and stuff like that. Sometimes I'll go to that as an anchor point because I can't find it in myself in that moment. So I'll go to, okay, what does the research say about resilience? What does it say about this? And I'll use that to help me kind of move forward until I can like find that in myself again. And, but I will always trust my inner voice more than anything else. But we, in our culture, in Western culture, we are very other focused, I think. Like, we look outside of ourselves for effort. Like, am I okay? Am I doing enough? Do I have enough stuff? Do I have the right degrees? What about the clothes? What about the body? Like, all the things. And I think it creates this like homogenization that is like culturally approved of.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then we lose the diversity and the color that actually leads to strength, right? Like,
I love that.
Like, yeah. And I often talk about that, like your gut microbiome requires diversity. The soil requires microbial diversity. The world, people, we are nature. Like, we also require diversity for strength and resilience and beauty and joy and all the things. Anyways, it's just a thought, but my invitation to anybody listening then would be to notice where you're comparing and you're looking outward. And could you like look inward and trust that, hey, I already am gifted. I already have things to share. Who I am is not only enough, it's like beautiful and needed.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, well said. I love that too.
Well, okay. So I'm going to skip one thing that I had for sure kept kind of optional, but judgment. Did we say enough about judgment? I guess maybe we did. We touched on judgment around play. Yeah, I think we did, right? Like, you know, are we allowed to experience joy or to play when the world is burning? Yeah, we touched on that. Mm-hmm. I guess just, is there anything else that you want to add?
It's one thing to say we shouldn't judge ourselves for playing, but when you get there, just notice the noise in your head. It's so prevalent. It's just so there. That it's a huge hurdle to set aside just to be spontaneously who we are. Why is that so hard? I'm kind of mad about that being hard, but it has to do with judgment. So don't take that lightly.
Yeah, and there could be internal and external judgment, right? So All right, so I think I'd like to wrap up speaking to the idea of purpose or living on purpose, midlife and beyond. So I did already touch on this, but I'd like to come back to it. It's always been important for me, the sense of living on purpose. And for me, the way for years and years and years that I experienced it was just that as long as I'm walking out my values, I'm on purpose. And my values are really strong for me. And even like after my son died, I was like, I haven't shared this in a while because it's been 4.5 years since our boys died, but like I felt like I was knocked to my knees and I had to sort of like my hands and knees bloodied, you know, my heart ripped open, crawl, but I was still on purpose because I was so clear on my core values. And so for me, like as I said, I love research. So I love reading about the blue zones and, you know, different people and what indigenous cultures, like how do we engage with this idea of purpose? What does it mean? What does it look like? And right now, like in this season, I still believe that that's an anchor thing for me, like what, just walk out my values no matter what else is happening in my body, my life, the world around me. I can always do that. But also more and more I'm seeing it as this like sense of, if we can find our way to true self and simply focus on living fully, and that And living fully means, like all the things we were talking about, being healthy, right? Doing our healing work so that what we spill over into the world is good and hopefully, you know, doesn't harm, hopefully, right? And actually like lifts up. And we give ourselves more and more permission to do what we most love, that we naturally live on purpose. Like I'm seeing it as almost this organic thing, but not easy, right? Because like you have to say yes to the healing, because if we don't do our healing work, we just perpetuate old cycles of harm and patterns of harm, right? So it is a big commitment and a daily choice and all of that. But anyways, but I don't see it as complicated. Like I see it as, yes, it's a commitment. Yes, it's hard work. When we do our healing work, by golly, there are days that I would like it to be done. And I really mm-hmm. realize that, like, as long as I am here, I will be doing the work. But also, it reduces this pressure when I realize I don't have to go chasing some elusive sense of purpose. It's not a mystery. It's just here. Like, yeah. So I would love for you to share, you know, how you relate to that idea of living on purpose. And if you're open to it, and if you, you know, it makes sense for you, do you have a why or a sense of purpose or mission or impact or legacy that you want to leave behind? You know, there's all these words that we hear sometimes. So yeah, just however you feel comfortable speaking to that. Kathy, why don't you start?
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that comes to mind, I don't really think all the time about kind of on purpose, like this is why I got to do this, because I really resonate with the core values, like getting, like knowing my core values and living from them. And I always know when I'm in violation of them. I am more in touch with that than I used to be. Like I know when it's like in violation, and then trying to have courage to then realign whatever that looks like to get back to them, because living out of them is just too hard. But I guess one part that comes to mind for me, especially in midlife, 57, deep pain in our lives, times that if I didn't have my other kids, I don't know. I just know that they kind of helped me keep going, and meaningful work and community helped me keep going. But life is short. Life is so short. And so for me, a big piece of it is, it doesn't matter. I always say it's better to do it at 30 than 40, 40 than 50, 50 than 60, 60 than 70, 70 than 80, 80 than 90. Like there's no timeline on shifting things and healing things and trying new things. And so I think that I don't want to wait to have anything aligned to live out in more freedom who I am, with more confidence and groundedness and security. Because ultimately, to me, it's like coming from an insecure place was what I used to do. It just was easy. And then my faith system actually loved that. They loved me to be insecure and not free and whole and integrated, split, broken, all the things. So now as I become more free, I really do feel like a passion to just be me. Really, ultimately, like everything we're talking about is actually just being ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's why I absolutely love what you said about simplicity, because it's in there, but how hard it is to just be ourselves. Mm-hmm. And to live and untangle from family systems and faith systems and old messages and all that is lifetime work. But I think the on purpose part for me is not waiting for healing to happen to practice. It's mm-hmm. all tangled up and it's all simultaneous, and we're not going to have any of this figured out. We're going to have to live. That's my favorite thing that Phyllis taught me. Anytime I'm like, I just got to figure this out, I'm in trouble. But when I can live from my soul, which really does want ease of heart, and it wants to be grounded and free, it wants to do fun things and do meaningful work. Mine is in community building and creating healing spaces for all people across all of our differences. And that's me. And so living from that place, I don't want to take another 10 years to do some of it.
Yeah.
I don't have to do all of it. And I think that's the other piece. We go too big all the time. We got to do this big thing. And just like little things help us in the day to day. That's why in 12-step recovery, it's one day at a time. So how in one day can I have a little more joy, a little more ease of heart, do something that I love to do and be more in my body and my soul and not in spinny, what the world wants of me. If like one day at a time we could do that, that would really build a lot of strength and resilience over time. And I feel like that's our work. It's just one day at a time and not waiting because life is short. So that's me.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for bringing that up. Cause I agree. It's so, so, so important. Like, and I always say in my work, like we find our way in progress, not before. Yeah. So we don't have to be able to see how to get from here to here. We just like, what's the next step? One tiny step. That's it. You know, but we can't figure it out from the couch. So, and the other thing is like recovering perfectionist, the only way I have done anything of value in my life is imperfect action. And it's like, maybe it's not even day by day. It might be hour by hour, minute by minute, depending on what else is happening in my body or my life. Yeah. Thank you for that. How about you, Phyllis?
Well, my relationship with purpose, a sense of purpose, I feel like I've always been desperate to find my purpose and to live my purpose and to be my purpose. And my hyper thinking brain was on it all the time until it kind of crashed. And then when I started looking back at how my purpose has emerged, it was always under the radar. So like there are lots of people, and my husband is one of them, the typical, what do you want? Set the goal, make the steps, work the steps to getting to your goal.
What's his Enneagram type?
He's a six. His tri type is a 6-3-1.
Oh, okay.
So he's he's the taskmaster, and his Myers-Briggs is a ESTJ. So he is right in line with setting goals, getting stuff done, being responsible. You know, just and very logical, linear, all that. I'm none of that. And so, but driven to find my purpose and be my purpose in the world, and I was preoccupied with a sense of calling in my faith system, because I did feel called to some things, but blah, blah, blah. So it wasn't until my brain sort of crashed around all of that, that I stopped and looked back and went, has there been a through line this whole time? You know, I kind of back my way into things. I find my way as I'm going. And I had to let go of conceptualizing my purpose and giving myself the freedom to just live who I am. So you said it so beautifully, Krista, around connecting ourselves with how nature works and being organic in the flow of, like, the earth is natural and organic, and a tree doesn't worry about whether it's living its life purpose. It just gets planted and watered and fed, and it becomes a tree, and the tree is intrinsically valuable in and of itself. So it's just by being itself, it's fulfilling its purpose. So that gave me a lot of freedom to go, well, okay, if I spend my time knocking off the things that get in my way, which is usually thinking things, judgments, criticisms, second guessing, wondering about what I should and shouldn't be conceptually, if I can let go more and more of that, then, and just live out this other instinctive, and I'm a 9 on the Enneagram, so my instinctive type really is a guide for me, then I am who I am, and I'm fulfilling my purpose by letting that be a natural expression. So I really liked how you put that that interconnection between being ourselves and being organically ourselves. And so I hope that I can hold space for other people to do that. And that's my purpose, as far as I know.
Thank you both for being here. We'll wrap up, but I enjoyed the conversation with you, and I just appreciate both of you. Thank you for the work you're doing in the world just by being you and spilling over.
Oh, all right. Back at you. That, so fun to hang out.
So appreciate some of your thoughts, more and more of your thoughts, even since we had our conversation together on the podcast. So thanks for being such a great host.
Yes.
All right. And to anybody listening, I'll see you next time, or until next time, make peace with messiness to make space for joy. See you.
Bye.